On this Brian Goff Show, Johnny Wonder, a good friend of mine who has made a couple small appearances on the show, is going to hop on for a good bit thanks to the Hanger Hotline presented by Watson Golf. He's got mad influence in the golf equipment space, and it's not only because of his role at GolfWRX.com, but definitely because of his passion for the game of golf and the relationships this dude's made throughout the years. So we're going to go all in on Johnny Wonder next.
The Brian Goff Show.
Four!
Presented by Cobra Puma Golf.
That was an excellent shot.
Yeah, real good form.
Johnny, you're a friend of mine, and it's thanks to golf, and it's thanks to you. And, you know, the first time you ever reached out to me, put me on your podcast, The Gear Dive, you talked to me about myself. We talked about me, but now it's time to talk about you. Even when you've been on my podcast in the past couple times, we've talked about, you know, a little bit of everything. But this time, it's the focus on you. So welcome officially to my show as a guest.
It's quite the honor, let me tell you. As a golf head myself, I could appreciate a wolf of the same fur, and that is exactly who you are. So happy to be here.
Speaking of wolves and fur, if you hear my dog in the background, so I had to entertain my dog by giving him a golf ball. It's the only thing that will keep him 100% entertained for 40 minutes. So if you hear him chomping, that's it.
The real question is, what kind of golf ball did you give him?
Well, it's a Pro V1. I'm a Pro V1 player, therefore I have a lot of Pro V1s, but it was a used one, which is probably not good for my dog, you know, for being honest.
He could probably peel the cover off that thing. That's okay. Let's see where it goes. Let's stay open-minded on it.
So Johnny, let's just start with our relationship. It stems from equipment conversations that we've had via Instagram. You know, that's how this whole world connects. And then it turned into a podcast appearance. Then it turned into you and I teaming up for Battle at the Beach, which I still can't thank you enough for coming to our event, just because you've been very vocal about what Mel and I do, and you've been a huge supporter. So a big thanks to you for all of that. But you become a friend. So we shoot the shit on a regular basis. I'd say at least a weekly basis at minimum. You didn't start, you know, you haven't been working for GolfWRX.com forever. You've always kind of done a little bit of everything. So just take me through the progression of where you were, where you're from, how you got to here.
It's kind of a weird story. So I'm from Seattle originally, born and raised in West Seattle. I mean, I guess the easiest way is how I got into golf. So like I was 15 or 16 years old and I played really competitive baseball. My old man was the coach. And going into my junior year, I was sick of playing for my dad and had kind of a crappy attitude. But at the same time, I was playing on a team that if my dad wasn't the coach, I wouldn't have probably got on. It was that good of a team. And I was a good baseball player, but I was small. And going into that season, I just kind of looked at my dad. I'm like, I don't want to play anymore. You know, obviously he was bummed and my high school coach was bummed, but you know, I was like, I want to go work at the golf course and go pick balls and hang out with my buddies and smoke cigarettes. And, you know, that's what I wanted to do at the time. And that's when I kind of got the golf bug, because the assistant pro there was a guy named Mike Montgomery. And actually there was two of them, a guy named Jim Bennett and a guy named Mike Montgomery, that kind of took me under their wing and kind of realized I was a pretty good athlete and could actually hit the golf ball. And they just started teaching me the tools of the trade, the tricks of the trade. And I got really good, really fast. I call him my godfather. He's not really my godfather, but I've known Mark Langston from the Angels since I was about 6 or 7 years old. And he's been like a kind of a surrogate father to me even to this day. He kind of said, look, like when you graduate from high school, I want to get you a job working in the clubhouse for the Angels. So that kind of got me into Southern California, which, you know, obviously helped my golf game out tremendously, because that time when I was with the Angels, you're working a lot of hours when they're there, but when they're on the road, you could have up to 2 weeks off. This is where I met Nico Bellini, who has been on my podcast before. And we just started playing. I just started playing with a lot of really good junior Southern California players, and my game, yada, 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 got better, better, better. So kind of fast forward into just kind of like what happened, you know, within the 5 or 10 years after that. So, you know, my life kind of went in a bunch of different directions. So I was going to college at Cal State Fullerton, and at the same time, randomly got into acting. Mark Langston's daughter was taking acting classes in Hollywood, and I would drive her up sometimes when Mark and Michelle couldn't take her up. So I would go up with her, and then one day the acting coach said, hey, look, we need a guy to come in here and read with the girls. Can you read? And I'm like, yes, I can read. I can't act, but I can definitely read. And, you know, went in there and read and sort of tried my best to act these scenes out. And after the class, you know, she asked me if I had any interest in acting, and I was like, not really, but, you know, I'm not completely closed-minded to it. And, you know, within a month, I had an agent and a manager and was going on auditions and had headshots. And you know, just all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, I guess I'm an actor boy now. Started listening to Bob Dylan and reading Kerouac books and got all deep and introspective and grew my hair out. And it's just like, it's just the biggest poser version of an actor you could ever find. And I did that for a while and did okay. I got into the unions. I booked a bunch of commercials. I did a couple of little pilots, but you know, I couldn't act. And where golf falls into this is golf was always the one thing I turned to that I just always knew a lot about. I knew I had a lot of confidence in the golf space as far as playing it and knowing what I knew about it. I was obsessed with it. That transition, did a bunch of jobs during that time. I was a bartender. I did marketing for a Mercedes-Benz company. When I say marketing, I mean like I was in phone sales and you know, customer service and selling AMG packages to pre-existing clients. And I did that. And then I got into the mortgage business and made a ridiculous amount of money in a short amount of time, like every other person did. And fast forward to around 2011. And this is when the Golf WRX thing kind of kicked in. So I was working in a real estate job and kind of miserable and, you know, just on the weekends kind of doing nothing. But I was always on Golf WRX. And I had been a member of the site since like 2005. The girl I was dating at the time said, hey, why don't you're always on that site? Like, you like to write. Why don't you see if you can go write for them? And this is before the featured writer program had started. So I emailed Zach, the editor, and said, hey, look, I have some ideas. Are you guys taking on like quote unquote civilian writers? And he's like, well, send me what you have. Send me a sample. And I sent him, I didn't have a sample. So I'm like, I'm going to have to come up with a story. So I called Mark. I'm like, hey, I'm going to do a story around playing golf with my childhood hero. Like I won a contest and I got to go out to Shady Canyon and play at your club with you. And it was like kind of like a Make-A-Wish Foundation type scenario. And he was like, that's fucking ridiculous because one, no one's going to believe you. And two, I've played more golf with you than anybody. Like, this is a sham. Like, I'm like, it's just a sample. It's never going to see the light of day. So I wrote this story about me showing up to Irvine to Shady Canyon and meeting Mark for the first time. And, you know, truth be told, I'd known him for 25 years at that point. And truth be told, also, like, I played more golf with Mark than anybody I know. Sent it off to Zach. He's like, look, I'll take a look at it. And a couple months later, he emailed me and said, hey, great article. It's on the front page of the site. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, it's on the front page of the site. And I automatically, my stomach drops. I'm like, oh my God, it's such a lie. Like, that first article is such a sham. It was a liar. So I was like, okay, this is bad. This is real bad. But he's like, no, they liked it. And it got a good response. And so he came back to me and said, hey, look, we have PGA Tour seasons coming up. This is like in the wintertime, I believe. New clubs are coming out. Would you like to be like a reviewer and you can test some stuff and you can write some articles around the big tournaments, the Masters and stuff? I'm like, yeah, sure. Just throw me assignments and I'll do it. So I started doing that and ended up writing about, 30 or 40 articles for WRX. Got into the film business, ended up taking, getting hired to run a company, made a movie. This is kind of a funny story. So how I broke into the actual paying job at WRX was a couple winters ago. I guess this would be last January, 2018. Film business financially is up and down. So I knew I wanted something stable, but I wanted it to be something I loved and I believed in. And I love WRX. I love that website. And it's been my friend of mine for years. And the one thing I noticed that they weren't doing was video content. And I had, discussions with Andrew Tursky, who was the editor at the time. And I was like, look, you guys don't do video. I have a ton of ideas. I don't think it's going to cost a lot of money to do it. But I want to be the guy that does video. Like, let me show you. Because I had done an urban golf performance little video piece for an article I wrote for them, and they really liked it, even though it was, like, really poorly done. But it didn't matter. It was video. It was content. And they got a bunch of hits. They, liked my ideas enough to bring me into Dearborn, and I interviewed with Richard and Aaron Martin and all those guys and kind of drew out this idea of what I thought it could be. And, they were gracious enough to hire me and bring me on and give me a salary and make me part of the team. And where I sit today, that was, 18 months ago, I guess. And obviously the job has transformed into way more than I thought it was going to be. At first I thought I was just going to be developing ideas and then, going out and filming stuff. And it's become far more than that. I never thought I'd have a podcast. I do a lot of business development stuff. I do sales. I do all the video packages, stuff like that. It's become something bigger than I thought. And it literally was just born out of an idea. The whole idea to do this, to reach out to Andrew Tursky, is I was literally, my kids were napping with my girl. It was snowing outside. And I just had an idea and started writing it down. And once I got the idea fully cooked, I emailed it to Andrew and said, I want to talk about this. And a month later, I was hired. And now I sit where I sit now, which is pretty fun.
So what is your actual title at golfwrx.com?
I don't know. The director of original content, or director of content, I guess, would be my title. It's a multifaceted job.
You do more. So just spill the beans on this. When somebody's commenting on Golf WRX's Instagram, is that you that's responding primarily, or are there a couple people, a couple cooks in the kitchen?
That's me. Since November of last year is when Richard sort of kind of handed me the credentials and said, like, look, like, you know, here you go. And every once in a while, he'll throw a post in there. But for the most part, I'd say 95% or 97% of the content that gets thrown up on RIG and all the comments, you know, the little script at the bottom of the picture is me.
How much time are you spending on that, like between that and your own brand? Because eventually, Johnny, you're Johnny Wonder. People are just into you and what you do, whether you're with WRX or not. So I'm just saying, how much of your time is spent on you and how much time is spent on Golf WRX?
It's all part and parcel of the same thing. Like I don't have my platform without WRX. You know, the reason why my Instagram, which I started on day one of my job at WRX, the reason I have, you know, the small amount of followers that I do and I have a voice is because WRX gave me one. And I'll never forget that. Like I'm very, very aware of the fact that, that I have that. But I mean, I don't spend a huge amount of time.
You spend like a natural amount of time, like as it comes naturally to you, I guess. Is that probably an accurate way to say that?
Yeah, I don't grind on it. Like I'll get an idea and I'll throw it up there. Like the things that take me the most time to do on the big IG is literally if I want to create a like a GIF or a meme, if I have like a funny idea and I'm like, okay, this might get me in trouble, but I'm going to throw it up anyway. I'll, you know, going on TubeDegram, I'm doing all that stuff and putting the post together, like takes me 5 or 10 minutes. But for the most part, like, you know, we're fortunate at WRX because we have not only access to stuff that comes out early, but we also have Greg Moore out on tour. So a lot of the posts that I can do are from the pictures that he takes because those will always get a lot of play. And I might get a Tiger Woods type equipment picture that nobody else will have. So like a lot of the pictures you see at Tiger's clubs, a lot of the really good ones are WRX pictures.
Okay.
And, you know, it's kind of a, you know, if you scroll through our Instagram right now, like you'll see some posts that I kind of had to think about or, you know, if it's a themed post, for example, like the captain's pick post I put up, I can all take all their irons and put the, you know, the top potential picks for the President's Cup, all kind of a map of posts or put together a post of all their irons.
Yeah, which by the way, was genius.
Well, yeah, I do. Like, I love doing stuff like that. And that's, you know, that's just a good way to just continue to push Greg's photos. And, you know, but then it's funny, like, this is how the world works. There's a post that was actually quite polarizing on our Instagram of a guy driving a golf cart through a bunker. And it was like a TikTok thing that I saw. And I was just like literally in bed with my son, just laughing my ass off. I threw it up there and it's literally like one of the biggest posts we've had in 2 years.
I'm looking at it now. It's got like 168,000 views and over 5,000 likes, which you would think only Tiger Woods can compete with something like that. You know what I like about it though is this isn't what Golf WRX does. You're allowed to do it every so often. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm not a big fan, even though I've got like some friends and all that in the, where they just kind of reshare and repurpose everyone. My whole thing with it is when that's what you do and it's like, how do you do it differently than everybody else? But for you, this is not what you guys do. So I understand why it's so fucking funny and perfect. I've seen this video a million times and I'm just finding it more funny because I can relate with you about it.
Well, it's also like one of the things I wanted to do on the Instagram was to create a little bit of levity on it as well. Like, you know, it is very, you know, because some of the comments that were in there were like, you know, this is just you guys, you know, this is you guys are a highbrow golf website. This is just garbage. You're teaching kids to do something that, you know, and I understand the argument. I do. But at the same time, like funny is funny. And I'm not advocating for people driving golf carts. I also rely on the fact that people have common sense. And, you know, me posting a picture of a guy driving a, and it's not the first time I've done it. There's a couple of them that I've posted up of guys like, you know, driving over a tee box with a golf cart flying out of the cart. I also like the real world, you know, common sense. You know, I always ask everybody just let common sense, you know, drip off your tongue like poetry, you know, like just use your brain. Like, do you really think that we're going to advocate for people driving through golf carts? And if you have a young child, you can obviously say, hey, like, this is a funny post, but we don't drive golf carts through bunkers.
Well, it's the get off my lawn guy. There's those people everywhere. Dude, this is the funniest thing. Speaking of this, so I get this tweet yesterday. So I posted a picture of my stats from a driver that I can't really I'm not supposed to share any data yet on a certain driver. So anyway, right. I shared some fucking data and it's awesome. And my smash factor was 151. So this guy on Twitter straight up is like, and who knows, this is like Ranger Rick to the 100th degree because he has nothing to do with anything. But he straight up says a plus 1.5 smash is virtually impossible. And I said, lies. And he said, whatever, bet you dinner, no tour player has a 1.5 smash factor. And it just so happened that I was doing the pod with Aaron Price, who's, you know, he's a tour player. I said, I'm with one. And he said, you owe me dinner. So, you know, it's like, but it's like that guy. And then I dive into this guy and I'm like, you know, I go to his LinkedIn and I'm like, dude, you actually don't do anything in the golf industry. Who are you to tell me or anyone else that is in the industry that this isn't possible?
Well, that's the thing also, like, that just right. And it's part of our culture now. And it's, and I'm going to go off on a tangent here, but it's like, you get people on social media, everything becomes gospel, right? It's never a nuanced conversation. Like, if I see somebody post TrackMan numbers with a 151 smash, right, my head doesn't go like, that's impossible. Like, there's just no way he's juicing up the numbers. My brain goes like, that's cool. Like, that's some crazy math, but I know that it's possible. I would really love to understand like how he got to that conclusion. Like, I would just want to know, like, that's cool. Like, what did you do? Like, you know, what does the data tell you, Brian? Like,
yeah, maybe, I don't know. Maybe he spends his time on Foresight or something like that, where, you know, it reads the face on swing speed. Therefore your smash factor gets drawn down because your swing speed goes up. It throws the ratio, you know, off. For anyone listening that doesn't know, smash factor is ball speed divided by club speed. It's very simple math.
It's simple math. And yes, maybe it's a hot face. Maybe the shaft is kicking in a odd fashion, or what does it matter?
Update on the golf ball. I've had to take this golf ball away from the dog. He's chewed through the urethane cover. I've had to give him a Pro V1X. I needed to give him a little bit of a firmer cover.
Let him chew on an AVX. He'll never get through that thing.
I got a couple of those. Actually, I should have just given him a range ball. Let's change gears a little bit, Mr. Gear Dive. This is, you know, let's talk straight equipment and some of the things that you've got to experience since working for Golf WRX or personally.
There's a few, actually. I've been pretty vocal on this. The Titleist golf ball plant visit was pretty eye-opening. And I am a big fan of a few different golf balls out there. I think the TP5X is a great golf ball. I think Bridgestone makes a fantastic golf ball. Srixon makes a good golf ball. But going to the Titleist ball plant and you see not only the little town that Titleist has kind of taken over, but you also see the checks and balances that go through to actually get a ball in a box and the amount of brain power that goes into making a Titleist golf ball, you'd be hard pressed to want to play anything else after you go on that visit. I've always used the comparison, like if you are grading a golf ball in five categories and it's a 1 to 10 rating in each category, Titleist is going to be 8 out of 10 in all five categories, where there might be a golf ball that's 10 out of 10 in one category and 6 out of 10 in the other, but across the board, Titleist will be 8 out of 10 in every single one. Luckily for me, I'd already been playing Titleist golf ball, so they didn't have to sell me. I've been playing them for 20 years. So that was a cool one. Experiencing the whole PXG thing has been pretty cool. I've done it about three or four times now, and getting down there and seeing this, like, this golf startup company, which is still very much a startup company, and the amount of piss and vinegar that go into making those golf clubs is pretty impressive. You know, there was one sort of like really kind of out of body experience. So last summer, Andrew Kursky and I went to Artisan to go see Mike Taylor and all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
The Artisan's cool enough. Right. That's cool enough. It's Mike Taylor. I text with Mike. I don't know him really well, but I know him well enough to, like, you know, shake his hand and give him a hug type thing. And we get in there and it's literally like a graveyard of old Nike stuff, but like old Nike tour stuff. So the moment that you walk in, you look to the left and it's just bags and bags of wedges and irons. And, you know, there's like a Rory bag with all of his grinds. And then there's a Paul Casey bag and there's a Tommy Fleetwood bag. But then you go back into this back area and it's a caged off area. It's all a Tiger's mock-ups. So it's every sample that they've either made for Tiger or an old club that they used to model a new club for Tiger, the wear patterns of where he may have tested that club. There's a couple of like old gamer six irons in there from different models. There's a couple of like one-off Nike blades that they made for him, because Tiger's blades were never the same as the ones you would get in the store. They would always be, you know, a little bit different. And I remember, like, Andrew Tursky and I were standing in front of this cage, and we were there for like an hour, just grabbing club after club, and there's dust all over them. And, you know, you grab the club, and you get black all over your hands from all the grind dust that's, like, you know, getting on top of them. And you could see his career through this cage, in this cage.
You could see his career.
Oh, I'm just going like, oh, well, you can see like what Mike did to get him out of the chipping yips. Like, you can see how the wedge grinds started to evolve as his chipping got bad in 2015. So like those really high bounce wedges that he went to with a really wide sole,
yeah,
when he was really struggling. You saw those wedges, and you saw the progression to get to that wedge. So it was like his normal kind of C grind that he kind of plays with now. But you'd see the testing process to finally land on that high, on that really high bounce wedge. And I'm just watching, I'm looking at Tursky going, dude, like, I would love to take 50,000 pictures of this cage. And Mike, the one thing Mike asked is like, don't take any pictures of that cage.
Yep.
Like, just don't. That's me and Tiger. That's me and Tiger working. And I'm just like, oh God.
That's unreal to even think about, though. Can we just make note that I think it actually took us 30 minutes to get through this podcast before we had the mention of Tiger Woods. And that, I believe, has got to be a record.
For my podcast, it is. I typically try to get him integrated in the first couple. Because, like, let's be honest. You know, I said this on a podcast, and I took a beating for it. But, like, he's bigger than the game. I'm sorry.
You said,
like,
that on multiple podcasts, including mine.
Yeah, he's bigger than the game. And anybody that thinks I'm wrong, let me ask you a quick question, Brian. Like, when he won the Zozo Championship, if that would have been, and I love Rory McIlroy. I adore him. But did anybody, if that would have been Rory McIlroy, or when Rory McIlroy won the WGC and it was late at night when they were playing on TV, did anybody walk up to you and ask, like, did you stay up and watch Rory? Nobody asked me that question.
Nope.
But I had 10 people come up and ask me, did you stay up and watch Tiger? Wasn't that amazing? These are people that don't even play golf. I did. I totally sat up with my phone at 2 a.m. and watched this guy win, was not tired and didn't feel like I was making a time sacrifice. I didn't even feel like I sacrificed sleep. And one of my colleagues said this, every single time Tiger wins or succeeds, it sets back the tour's marketing initiatives for when he leaves 3 years, because they're drafting off Tiger Woods. And decides to hang it up, their whole marketing strategy is going to have to change in a great way, because right now you have a big gorilla that at any moment when he pokes his head out of the forest, it's ratings, it's buzz, it's interest, it's everything. The moment he disappears, it's going to be a tough sled. It's just reality, folks. I'm sorry. And we should all be thankful that it's like that, because we were alive when this guy was playing.
Well, and I think for the equipment side of things, it's just made it that much more fun to follow along with. I think when he signed with TaylorMade and Bridgestone, and he started to go with two different companies, right? Then it starts to kind of spread the wealth. From what I heard, Tiger had some deal with TaylorMade, which I could be totally wrong on this, that it was like backloaded in a sense of, if he didn't perform, he didn't get paid. But the moment he won and then won the Masters, he got like a shit ton out of that deal with TaylorMade. I could be wrong. You might know that. But my whole point...
I heard kind of the same thing.
Okay.
I heard it was kind of like, because when he signed that deal, I don't think any... And I asked David Abeles, who was on my podcast. He's the president of TaylorMade. And of course he gave me a cooked answer, which he's a really good salesperson, probably the best in the business. And I said, I kind of asked him, I'm like, did you foresee this? Like, come on. And he was like, we've always had a lot of confidence in Tiger. And my whole thing with TaylorMade is, you signed Tiger for two reasons. One is for legacy, and two is for his brain. So you're going to go and tap that guy and figure out how to make golf clubs. And so when they signed him, I'm like, you're genius, because you're going to get his body of work and start to use his expertise to build his golf club. Because right now the P7TW is, in my opinion, the best forged blade on the market. It's the prettiest looking one. It's the pinnacle of blades to me, just because of everything that goes into it. It's Tiger. It looks good. It feels good. It's traditional. It's got all these things in it, right?
Yep.
But like, there's no freaking way that when they signed him, they were like, oh my God, like, he's going to get his game back. And we're banking on him making the biggest comeback in human history. Like, nobody could have predicted that. Nobody. So this is a happy accident. So if I'm TaylorMade, I am smiling cheek to cheek, because you just won the lotto and you didn't even see it coming.
Now, and look, I'm just going to try and relate it, but on the Cobra side, you know, we were just at the Speed Zone launch, the big media launch party, which was a fantastic event put on by Cobra. You've got the current madman of Ricky Fowler, who can get anybody to buy anything because the dude's just so cool. And then you've got the old version of Ricky Fowler and Tiger Woods, and now a legacy guy in Greg Norman, right?
Right.
You get Greg Norman. Now, Greg Norman isn't going to go out. He's not playing in Champions Tour events or anything like that, you know, but you get Greg Norman because people still give a shit about what Norman does. And, you know, when Norman says something's cool, you're like, damn, Norman got some Forge techs. I'm going to go test those out.
Right. And there's certain guys that still have that play. Like Greg Norman to me, and I've said this to Cobra multiple times, like he's sort of an untapped resource in regards to equipment because his expertise and knowledge of equipment and what makes a good golf club are valuable as anybody out there, even Tiger. I would throw three or four names up there of guys that are like, if I had a golf club company, I would get this guy. You know, I've talked to Cobra multiple times, like you guys need to get him out there a little bit more talking about golf clubs and the history of Cobra. Like there's a legacy to the Greg Norman Cobra relationship that's not being leveraged. You can involve Tiger Woods in that conversation because he played the Woods for a long time. Mm-hmm. And you can involve Sergio Garcia in that conversation. You can involve Aaron Baddeley in that conversation. There's a lot of great players that played their stuff, especially the Australian crew because of Greg. It still holds water. And the thing that I love about where the market is going is little by little by little, we are starting as a market to look back to see what they did in the past because the old school tactics now are becoming popular. That's why you're seeing guys like Tad Moore, for example, Clay Long are starting to creep back into the conversation because of what they did. Greg Norman is like at the pinnacle of that.
Yeah.
It's just interesting, man. It's like, I love where, in regards to Cobra, I love the direction that they're going. You've said this, we've said this a bunch of times. It's a huge company run by about eight people. You know, I talk to Luke Epp all the time. I talk to Brandon Dickinson, who I adore, all the time.
But you're right. Big company ran by just a few people. You talked to Greg Norman. You know, we were at Drive Shack, and they announced Jason Duffner, and you had great conversations with Duff and Ben Showman from Cobra on what it took to get Duff in the bag. You can actually get that article at golftwitterx.com. Is really, you shine some good light on how hard it is to get a tour player like Jason Duffner to sign with a company because he was a free agent. Mm-hmm. He could have picked anyone. He ended up going with Cobra. I think a lot of it, the freedom for them to be able to really create the bag around what Duff wants. But you, when we were speaking of Norman, you had a surreal moment with Greg Norman, and we talked about it a little bit on the pod when we were live from Drive Shack. But now that we're just kind of here, you've had a week to think about it. Go back on that situation, pulling Greg Norman's wedge out of the bag and just the difference of it. Just explain the genius of Greg Norman and what he knows about the equipment side of things.
Yeah, we went to the media event and there was like this contest that they were going to do. And it was like a pro-am. So Ricky had somebody, Greg had somebody, Duff had somebody, and Claude Harmon had somebody. So they start picking names out of the hat, you know, who's going to go with who. And they pick, you know, a couple of guys from the UK and the guy from France. And so then Claude Harmon's pick came up and they said my name. And I was like, oh, God, okay.
Oh,
like,
shit.
Yeah, like, oh, shit, okay. So at that point, like, you know, you're sort of watching what's going on. And it came to be our turn. And, you know, the shot that I needed to hit, and they were playing like blackjack. So the card that I needed to land on was like 50 yards away. And I'm looking around and all I see is drivers and like Forge Tech 7-irons, right? So it's like, okay, I don't have a golf club. And there's also a bunch of staff banks sitting there. But, you know, when I say staff banks, I mean like Jason Duffner, Ricky Fowler, Greg Norman,
right?
Claude Harmon.
Right.
And Claude Harmon had like a rental set. So like his bag was worthless and he was my partner. So I'm looking at him going, dude, we don't have a club. So Greg Norman's standing right next to Claude and I'm looking around for a club and he goes, hey, there's some wedges right there. And I'm like, where? And he's like, right there, my bag. And I look at him and I talk to him like he's my brother. And I'm like, bro, I'm not going into Greg Norman's golf bag and pulling wedges out of the bag. You gotta be out of your mind. And I literally said this to him verbatim, like, you must be out of your mind. And he literally grabbed me by the arm, like, you know, gently in a polite way, but like, it's sort of like, he's like, no, I got you. And he kind of shuffled me over to his bag and he's like, look what I got. I got a 51, I got a 57. And he just starts grabbing stuff. He's like, you used a 57, and he pulls it out and it's like this custom, probably 6 or 7 year old raw Cobra wedge that's just like, it looks like it was forged out of the mountains of Mordor. And I'm grabbing this thing and I'm like, wait, what are you doing? Don't hand me a golf club. Like, what's going on here? So he hands me the golf club. So I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, not only am I holding Greg Norman's golf club, but this guy's giving me full license to go over there and hit it. So I walk over to the mat and I don't get nervous in those things at all. Like, I'll stand in front of 50,000 people in a golf show. I don't care. Like, I'm not wired that way. And for the first time, I'm like, I can't pull it back, dude. I cannot pull the trigger because I'm either going to top it. I'm going to shank. And this is a chip shot, mind you. This isn't a full swing. It's a little.
And we're from what? Like the third level? So basically all you have to do is kick the ball over the edge and it will go.
It will go. And I'm scared. I'm so nervous. I'm going to let it go and it's going to fly into the range. Like, that was my biggest fear. It's like, I can't hold on to the grip. I'm going to let it go and it's going to go into the driving range. And I'm going to be the guy on social media that threw Norman's golf club into the Drive Shack driving range.
Would have been amazing, because I think I have video, and granted, I'm like 40 feet away from you or 30 feet away from you, but I got video of you hitting that shot.
Luckily, I pulled it back. I hit the shot. It landed in the middle. And we got our cart, right? But I remember walking away from that just going, I just had like a serious holy shit moment. Greg Norman just handed me a golf club to hit a shot so Claude Harmon and I could compete in this blackjack. Like, all those thoughts, just, I'm like, who am I?
Who am
I? I had imposter syndrome. I'm like, I'm fake. The hand of God's going to come down here and strike me down.
I honestly would not have been able to pull the club. Ricky could have given me his wedge and I would have been like, sure, you know what, like, whatever. Norman, I feel like, man, if I disappoint this man, I'm never going to be able to, like, let this moment down.
It's like if John the Baptist walked up to you and just said, here, use my Bible. Like, no, John the Baptist, I'll find one. You just stay over there and be John the Baptist. You stay there and be great and shiny, and I don't need to interact with you.
What's coming, man? Like, what do we have to look forward to with golf equipment in the future?
Well, I think irons are going to be the story this year. I think everybody's trying to figure out the next big iron. I think in the driver category, rumor is that TaylorMade's got a really, 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 really hot one coming, the one that they're all sort of super excited about. Obviously, Cobra has an awesome one, and they did the same thing this year that they did last year, which is come out with something on fire that everybody's gonna like, and I think it's gonna increase the Cobra conversation. But like, in the future, my hope is that distance gets eliminated from the conversation and dispersion and strategy get built into it. I give Cobra credit for jumping on the Arcos train early, because the ball can't spin any less and the driver can't get any hotter. I think they're maxing out irons as well, because, you know, at some point the 5-iron is going to be at 20 degrees, and that's just, you know, it's not a 5-iron anymore. It's like a 2-iron.
All right.
So, you know, I said this on my podcast yesterday, the market has to demand. It's not like the golf club companies don't dictate what we're going to get. We do. Scores aren't getting any lower. Handicaps aren't going down. We're not attracting players to golf, you know, at an unbelievable rate. There's a lot of attrition in golf. And I think a lot of it's just because people haven't wrapped their head around the fact that, you know, lower scores equal attraction. When people feel like they can go out and play and shoot a decent score is good. So my hope for the golf market is that with modern technology, the chess game of golf is what drives everybody. And we start to build equipment and build strategies around actually playing better. Because my argument to that is like, yeah, great, I can hit it 300 yards, but then what? Like, now what do I do? And this is even for good players, you know, teaching people how to play golf courses, teaching people how to think, teaching people how to practice, use your time efficiently. I think that's all where I would like to see, you know, for all the OEMs too, like, how are you going to build that into your model? That's what I think. And I think wedge shafts are going to be a big topic of conversation, regulating spin, with wedge custom wedge shafts are going to be an interesting thing. And I think graphite iron shafts are going to be a big deal in the next 2 or 3 years. I think they're getting closer to steel.
Agree.
Year by year. So in the wood category, I think woods have sort of plateaued. I think that 20 yards for the everyday golfer is gone. I just don't think, if you don't hit it further now with the new equipment, you better get in the gym. But yeah, that's my hope. I hope the golf industry, from a club standpoint, everything just becomes smarter and built more around strategy than maximizing one golf shot.
I think the focus, is easy to go to distance because that's what's fun, but there's nothing fun about hitting a 7-iron 195 when you're wanting to hit at 180.
Well, no, and how does it serve you? Like, it doesn't. I think, I will also say this. I think what Cobra's doing with the one length thing, I think that's an interesting idea. I think there's a version of that that's gonna catch on. And I think, maybe it's one length to the 7-iron and then yep. progressing down from there. I think that's a thing. Because I've messed around with it a little bit, and I noticed that like a full length 4-iron versus a one length 4-iron, like the difference in yardage is like 5 yards, but the difference in dispersion is like not even close.
Interesting. See, I'm about to get a set of the ForgeTech one length, and I'm specifically to do a one length versus variable length comparison, using LaunchMiner data, but more importantly, using Cobra Connect and, getting the data from the course. Because deep down, if it looks good in the bay, but you don't shoot lower scores, then it's not really better for you. So, I definitely am a big believer in the data that you get via the golf course, but I was thinking about that. I was like, I might not come out of this and go, I like one length versus variable. I might come out of this saying, I kind of like them both in the same bag.
And you can do that. Like you can do that. The whole point to this whole thing, folks, for anybody that's listening, is to shoot a lower score, right? So it's not shooting a lower score in the sandbox that the market has built for you. It's shooting a lower score in the sandbox that you build for yourself. Like you get 14 shots at building a bag. So hopefully golf marketing machine that it is starts to teach you that it doesn't matter what it looks like, what the number on the club looks like, the length of the club looks like. Ultimately, and this is where fitting comes in, you find 14 clubs that are going to give you the best shot at shooting your lowest score. Period, end of story. That bag may not have that 320-yard drive in it. You have to be okay with that. Because I guarantee if I ask 100 people, would you rather hit it 300 or would you rather shoot 73? For the general golfer, most of them would want to shoot 73.
Smart take. Johnny, I know, we're up against the clock. I can't thank you enough for everything. Your support of what Mel and I do and, your support of just us as a friend means the world. You're a recurring guest on this pod for life. That's what it is. So this is, we could almost call this part one or like part 1.3. I don't know, but it's definitely something. And it was cool to kind of hear and allow anyone that, has gone to your podcast to hear me, granted you've got the monster that is the Gear Dive and Golf WRX, you definitely get a lot of listens, so I get more discovery when I go on your pod than you get on mine, but maybe, this kind of lets people that you haven't met or touched yet kind of a little bit of insight in what it's like working at Golf WRX and also kind of why you even got into the gig from the start, from being some flashy actor.
Oh God, hey. I can't act for shit. I want to say something really quick. And I get this question a lot. It's like, how do you break in? And I get DMs like this all the time. Like, I really want to break into golf content. How do you do it? And I use you as an example. The reason I believe in you and Mel so much is because you built it from nothing. You built a platform from nothing. You have a voice out of love of the game, right? And you're willing to do the work to build your platform. For anybody out there that wants to get into the golf content space, whether it's for WRX or my Golf Spy or golf.com or whatever, it starts literally, you have a cell phone and you have an opinion. The more unique it is to you, the more people will notice. And Brian LaRoche is like the pinnacle of that because you're a hustler, you work, and you have an opinion, and your opinion doesn't waver because people say they don't like it. It's just your opinion. That's how you break into the golf content. That's how you break into any space. Anything you want to do, like if you want to use golf as your example, like look at Brian and Mel. Like they got a tournament series now. They didn't have one 2 years ago. It came out of the middle of Brian's brain. Now the guy's got 7 or 8 tournaments going in 2 years and 20,000 Instagram followers and a Cobra sponsorship and a podcast. 2 years out of fucking thin air. So to the listeners out there, you want to get into the game, you got to run real fast.
That's too cool, man. It's spot on. Yeah, you're right though. You just have to go after what you want, and then you got to do it. You know, you got to be willing to do it. And if you're not willing to do it, then it's never going to happen. Cause we see it, you know, a lot, you know, people ask us that question all the time, you know, as far as how do you get into it and how do you, whatever, you just go, look, you take your skill set that you already have and you apply it to what you want to do. Or if there's a skill set you want, you go get that skill set and you got to do whatever it takes to get that skill set. For me, it was 3-4 years of social media marketing for a custom club fitter company, you know, TaylorMade Performance right. Labs, and then Loft Golf down in Palm Beach before I actually became a club fitter. So, you know, I was hanging around and put myself in that position, did a lot of shit for free or for barter. And yeah, it's definitely paid off and we're having fun with it. And we wouldn't be able to do it without the people that, you know, obviously support us and people like Johnny Wonder, man. It's always good to talk to you. It means the world having you on here. And for the record, my golf spy is hiring if anybody wants to go apply.
There you go.
The Brian Golf Show presented by Cobra Puma Golf.
Now that you're Brian Golf Show family, here's where I need your help. We'll do it after every pod. Shoot me a DM or tweet me what you learned on the show today after listening, and I'll throw you in an exclusive contest for some random Cobra Puma Golf gear. Never know what it could be. 1 month could be a driver. 1 month could be some hats. 1 month could be this, that. But for every 50 entries we get, we'll pick a winner to keep it exclusive. Thank you so much for your support. Now, go tell your friends about the Brian Golf Show. Thanks.